Hey, Air Cats and Kittens, I'm Mike Coffin. This is the Half Guarded Hour at HalfGuarded.com. Third show this week, and then I'll probably do it all over again next week, or I don't even know when, I don't know what day this one's airing, but it's the third in a row. This is hour three plus of my Saturday night, because I'm a winner. Talking to Matt Fowl. I screwed up his name on the show, like, right away. He does a lot of work with indie wrestling in Cincinnati. We talk about Dean Ambrose and Carl Anderson and some other guys. And then he gets home, and I get to speak to his fiance. And that's when I think the show really took off. And the last bit especially is the proudest thing I've ever done in my life. So without further ado, let's take it away to Matt, who introduces himself very well, because I was really gone by this point. So again, thanks for listening to the Half Guarded Hour at HalfGuarded.com, and make sure to visit our sponsor that I'm making up. Bye. Hi. 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 Hi, everyone. Half Guarded Hour here at HalfGuarded.com is brought to you by Brick House Tavern and Tap, specifically the one located in Downers Grove, Illinois. The Brick House Tavern and Tap is a family get-together with scantily clad women. You can go to the Brick House Tavern and Tap in Downers Grove at 1461 Butterfield Road, Downers Grove, Illinois. If you mention the Half Guarded Hour at HalfGuarded.com, you'll get an extra 15 cents off of each platter that you purchase. Again, that's the Brick House Tavern and Tap in Downers Grove, Illinois. Hello?
Hello there.
Oh, it worked. Okay, great. Oh, it looks like it's recording, too. Fantastic. Oh. I don't know. I'm freaking get all caught off guard. Cause for the reasons I normally am at this time of day. At 10 o'clock in the evening. Anyways, we have Matt Fowl.
German for putrid.
You know what? I know you're not introducing, get yourself over. Tell everybody listening to Half Guarded Radio at HalfGuarded.com, give yourself your own intro.
Oh, my own intro. Well, I guess I'll start with the shit that may actually listeners of Half Guarded and MMA and anyone that followed you from Observer might give a shit about. I do audio video shit for Indie Fed out in Cincinnati, Northern Wrestling Federation, that gave birth to such people as Abyss, Carl Anderson, Jillian Hall, Wildcat, Chris Harris. Been doing that for fucking almost 20 years. Yeah. It's kind of weird, actually, when I'm like, oh, my God, some of these kids that are now training, I've been in the business longer than they've been alive. I feel old.
Yeah, I kind of had that same feeling, even though I'm, like, I'm only 33, but I realized that if I had, like, screwed up in high school and then, like, my kids screwed up, in theory, I could be a grandfather right now.
Yeah, we have wrestlers that'll be like, yeah, I was a kid, and like they say we came to one of our shows, and I'm like, I was working that show. Oh, my God.
Yeah, when we realize, like, it's like, yeah, I remember the days of Steve Austin and The Rock, and you think, like, it was yesterday, and you realize that was 20 years ago. You're like, oh, shit, these people have no idea, and that's why they don't understand why some of this stuff today really sucks, because they have no, frame of reference.
Oh, yeah. The promoter that runs it, Roger Ruffin, he actually refereed for the WWF from like 83 to the late 90s, like off and on. He was the referee for Bret Hart, Roddy Piper at WrestleMania. He refereed Shawn Michaels' first pay-per-view singles match. He was also the referee that when Jake Roberts had Randy Savage bitten by the Cobra, he was the referee that grabbed Randy's leg that let Jake jump him. So it's his fault Randy Savage got bitten by a cobra.
Yeah, well, somebody has to take the blame for that one.
Exactly. So, yeah, so I do that. I also I have my own podcast as well. it's an advanced Dungeons and Dragons podcast of all games, first edition, RFIpodcast.com for that one. And because there must be a wrestling tie in everything I do, apparently, one of my co-hosts is Big Sally Graziano of the Full-Blooded Italians. And so I get to talk Dungeons and Dragons with, one of the FBI.
So Big Sal is the co-host on the Dungeons and Dragons podcast.
Yes.
Not wrestling. Is he a big D&D fan?
Yes. Oh, yeah. He's a big sci-fi D&D role-playing game nerd. He's big into that.
So you mentioned what's the focus of the D&D podcast? Because this one has me interested now.
It's the first edition, the version that came out in like 1979 through 1987, 1988. And we just talk about like the old books, we'll review products, because people are still making products for it now through they have like a Creative Commons type license available where you can like make your own D&D products. So people are still making stuff for it now. So we'll review that. We'll talk. Sometimes we'll interview people that work for TSR, the company that made Dungeons and Dragons back in the day, get the old war stories. So I've been doing that. I've been 5 years. No, going on six actually. So we're up to like 177 shows on that.
Wow.
Like, yeah. So.
You're just pretty much busy 24/7, aren't you?
Yes. Oh, and I also have an IMDb page as well. I do dabble in acting. Yes. I actually was in a movie, Three Knee Deep, that was in Redbox earlier this year for about, you can find it for about 3-4 months.
That was Redbox, not RedTube. Just for
right. Redbox. Yes, exactly. So yes, you could go and rent a movie that I had a little walk-on role in. I've been doing just dabbling in that. I had a couple friends that were actors locally, just doing some independent small stuff here. And they're like, hey, do you want to come over and just shoot, like just some goof around on camera and just, we'll have some fun, film some stuff, see what happens. So I did that and it was fun. So, and one thing that led to another. And now I've had just nothing major, just little walk-ons and stuff, but it was paying gigs. So I can say I've been paid to act. So, and I can also play the Kevin Bacon game with myself now. If you go to oracleofbacon.org, I think is the website where you can put in two actors' names and it'll show how they're related. I'm on it.
Really?
Yeah. Because I did a short film with a guy who was in, had like a little bit part in Ides of March, the George Clooney movie.
Huh.
And it, and then I'm also like a few other people that have just done things a little higher up. And the next thing you know, you're connected to like everyone.
I always figured like I get like connected somehow through like, you know, UFC or whatever. Like I've been on a show where, you know, Anderson Silva, George St. Pierre was, and then like he talked to Jean-Claude Van Damme who, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. It was like I did a movie with a guy who was in, what was it? The one show that would have like Nazis versus Viet Cong, it was on Spike at one point. I forget what it was called.
Oh, but, I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, I was in a movie with a guy who was a Nazi in that. and he knew Steven Seagal's wife. And so he had some great Steven Seagal stories. Like it would just, he told one, it was just Steven Seagal and his wife are in the house and he's walking around with two swords on his hip. Steven Seagal is, in real life now, the Steven Seagal you see in movies. That is him. He's become the character.
Oh, man. Or maybe, you know, we all just realized he could never act, and he was just being himself on screen. And that's why the movies are so terrible, because they couldn't advance a plot, director-wise and writing-wise. So Seagal said, no, I will never succumb to this bad guy. And they are like, what the fuck do we do now? Oh, we'll introduce another shitty bad guy with a bomb and a submarine or whatever movie's using.
Right. Yeah, it was like the Under Siege. The entire movie pitch, when they pitched that movie, was the guy walks into the executives and says, Die Hard on a Boat, and walks out.
Yeah.
And that's how it got picked up. Die Hard on a Boat.
They had him and, there was a really attractive blonde chick.
Yeah.
And, I don't know what her name is right now. I feel confident saying that she's the most noteworthy portion of the movie. Although they have made like three or four sequels to that.
I know. It's one of those. It's like, okay, the first idea was kind of cute and that tongue-in-cheek mid-90s let's blow shit up kind of way. But then it's just – it's kind of like The Marine. When the Marine series of movies, it's that.
Yeah, that's they're just like, you know, we have a name and we don't give a shit. We're just going to make it a joke. And, oh, we're going to bring in like every ironic 1980s star we can or shit like that. And it's all garbage. No one cares. It's fucking pointless.
It's become a self-parody.
Yeah, exactly. But I have shit written down here. And I see one of the – I mean, I know you talked about it a little bit before, but as far as work in Cincinnati and, you know, Carl Anderson, Abyss, some of these other guys – got their start there, but that, I'm turning into a total fucking douchebag, you know, radio mode right here. But there's, you know, of course, the biggest name from Cincinnati, I would imagine, is Dean Ambrose. Do you have any Dean Ambrose stories or anything?
Yeah, he actually wrestled us for about a year and a half, and one time we were after a show at a wing joint just hanging out. Next thing you know, someone's coming up from behind me trying to put on a shoot rear naked choke. So I tuck my chin, just trying to fight it, whatever. It's Dean Ambrose. So he's, for whatever reason, decides, hey, we're hanging out at this restaurant. I'm going to start doing some shoot grappling, and tries to put me in a rear naked choke, at which point he does actually succeed because he actually did some submission grappling tournaments up in Columbus for a little bit. He's just... The Ambrose on television, it's like cliche at this point, but it's just kind of him turned up. He's a cool guy, but a little eccentric, you could say. My fiance actually has friends that went to high school with him. So her people like know him prior to wrestling a little better. I actually knew his sister. She was an actress at a local, like, cabaret sketch comedy show. So I would go to that, and I knew her, and then I knew him, but I didn't realize they were brother and sister until one day I'm like, wait a minute, is your sister Lauren? Yeah. Oh, shit. So it's just real small world.
It's funny because, like, you know, it's Cincinnati. Like, it's a big enough city. You got baseball and football teams and shit like that. It's also the, for a rant, I don't know why, it's one of my favorite cities I've ever been to for a UFC. Like, the show is good and all that, but, like, someone just walk around the city, like, it just felt really nice because it's like a Sunday morning and there's like nobody out. And there was the first time I ever saw a Church of Scientology was in Cincinnati. So to me, that like Cincinnati is like the Midwest base for the Church of Scientology.
Yeah, there's quite a few of them around. My future sister-in-law's boyfriend actually lives close to another one. I'm just like, what the? Huh. But it's a nice little Midwest. It's like the stereotypical German Midwest city. It's very Germanic, and it's got an east-west divide. It's like if you grew up on the west side, you don't go to the east side, and if you grew up on the east side, you don't go to the west side for whatever reason. It's got the Yeah, and it's like the east side's like your more upper class, richer, and the west side's more working class. But it's just like your little Midwest city, and it's for outsiders coming in. I've talked to people that have moved here, and they say it's hard to make friends because everyone is just guarded. It's like they have their own little circles that people are in, and it's kind of hard for people to move here to get integrated. So they end up usually associating with other people that moved here.
Huh. I mean, it's weird though, because it's a really nice city, and of course you produced Dean Ambrose and I guess also Carl Anderson and Abyss. Is that right?
Yeah. Carl Anderson's trained at our wrestling school, Bone Crushers. Abyss trained here. I got to see Abyss wrestle. When I started, he'd been in the business maybe a year or so. He was actually like a marketing guy for the Cincinnati Mighty Ducks was his shoot job at the time. So he's like super just smart, like one of the smartest guys you'll meet when it comes to business. And also one of the nicest guys too, just – super friendly. So I got to see him early in his career. Same with Carl Anderson. He had maybe 1 or 2 years in when he started. So, yeah, it's really neat just seeing guys I knew when they were making nothing on the indies move up and actually, like, succeed. So I've got to see, like, 3 guys actually do stuff on national television.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like, you know, obviously Ambrose is, you know, doing very well in WWE, and Carl Anderson is one of the, I don't know, like, maybe 1 or 2 top American wrestlers in Japan right now or whatever, so... That's kind of crazy, actually.
Yeah, I mean, Lord knows those. Him working in Japan, I've spent more hours driving in the car with him probably than anyone else, because I'd pick him up at 4 a.m. and give him an airport run, usually. So we spend a lot of time just hanging out, talking in the car, because he's got 3 kids at home, wife. Don't want to wake them up when he needs to go to the airport for a 6 a.m. flight. So he'd be like, call me up since I'm... At the time, I was probably unemployed for about 5 months, so I just like, I got nothing going on. Waking up 4 a.m, nothing. So I'd run him back to the airport and just keep me informed of everything going on. And then right now, him going to in WWE, seeing all that hard work finally pay off, it's great. I mean, I'm really proud of him because when he went out to LA, he had like nothing. When he had the chance to train at the New Japan Dojo. Because he had like maybe $1,500 to his name, and that's all. Moved out there. No job, no nothing other than knowing he would have a roof to stay in and a place to train. And he was miserable, but it paid off in spades. Most people, if going through what he did, would have easily broken quit. But he persevered, and now he's on top of the world.
It's, I just can't get past the ideas. You know, just these guys, again, it's Cincinnati. It's like, you don't really, like, New York, L.A., Tokyo, whatever, even, like, you know, Dallas in the South and shit like that. You're like, you kind of like, okay, that makes sense, but it just seems like Cincinnati is not where I would imagine, like, one of the biggest stars in the world and a guy who's on his way to joining that upper echelon are from that same city at the same time, basically.
Like, right, and they... Yeah, it's like we had because early 2000s, HWA in Cincinnati had their developmental deal because of Les Thatcher. So we had a lot of guys come through it. Then we had, the promotion I'm associated with, Northern Wrestling Federation, Roger Ruffin running his school. And I mean, Roger's been around forever. He started in 83. I mean, he wrestled for like Dick the Bruiser. In Indianapolis, he wrestled for the Sheik up in Michigan. He's wrestled like Bobo Brazil in a match. So he's just one of those old territorial guys, been around, went out to, Kansas City and worked when Rip Rogers had the book out there. And so he just has all that knowledge and he's running a wrestling school and he's training guys and he's training them in that old school way and trying to train them right as opposed to just make a quick buck. So. That's how we're able to make guys like that. So he takes that knowledge of years past, everything he's picked up in his 30 plus years, passes it on to these new people, and some of them take that and are able to grab that knowledge and take it to the next level. So, I mean, yeah, when thinking back now, when it, like 18 year old me started in wrestling, if you would have said that, like, some of my best friends would be wrestling on television and main events, spots, and I'd just be like, what? I mean, even just throughout, I've worked shows with like Jimmy Snuka and Jerry Lawler and like guys like that too. They'll come through and
good to link those two guys together, by the way. Anyways, go on. Why do I not hear anything?
I don't know.
Okay, I can hear you now. Okay.
Okay. But yeah, he got booked on a show in Fairfield, and I was running sound. The promoter didn't even tell me, so I didn't even have his music. So I go up to Snuka, and it's like, what would you like for music? He's like, puts his arm around me. I don't need no music, brada. And he comes out, no music, crowd loses their shit. He didn't need it. But, and this was back in like, probably like 98, 99, during the peak of the wrestling boom. So, Yeah, that place was packed, and it was just over his head. And he was really cool, but yeah, you could tell that he wasn't quite all there.
Well, he got hit in the head by the coconut. You know, these things, you know, you can't recover from that overnight.
Right, I know. Yeah, that can be like permanent long term damage there.
Yeah, I mean,
even if the incident that he's currently on trial for happened prior to the coconut spot, but
he was under the influence of a coconut concussion. You can't hold a man responsible for murdering a woman if you've been hit in the head by a coconut. Like, that's just absurd.
Right. I'm sure if we go through it, there's some legal precedent where someone got off with murder because of a coconut. I bet if we go through Gilligan's Island episodes, there probably is.
Yeah, or, you know, the Samoan justice system probably has a whole long list of different ways to use a coconut to murder and kill. That's okay. That's what I imagine they do in the Pacific. They just, you know, walk around, all their laws. It's not maritime law. It's not like common law or civil law. It's coconut law. They just figure out, you know, what can you and cannot do with a coconut. Can you throw it at your neighbor? Only if your neighbor says so. If you hit him, he doesn't see it. No, it's what we call this way or whatever.
Right. I mean, I'm sure there's like, if you do it, these are the list of reasons that it is acceptable to use a coconut and take someone's life. I guarantee it. It's probably chiseled into some stone somewhere. Not easily available on the internet, but if you talk to the right elder chieftain, I'm sure we can figure it out.
All right. I can obviously tell you finished your drive. You're almost home, but you did mention a fiance and you're getting married.
Yes.
And then you write to me, you say, I could give you advice on what not to do or whatever. So what do you need help with from a divorced, pathetic, guy in the same semi industry?
Yeah. I would say, how do I not become you?
Well, first of all, is your penis more than 3 inches big?
Okay, we're good there. Penis much larger than 3 inches.
Okay.
As I'm walking into my house saying my penis is larger than 3 inches, I'm sure my fiance is very confused.
Wow, that's true. Is she a bitch? Like, that's a way to avoid it.
No, she's actually really sweet and kind. Podcast.
Oh,
Yes, my fiance is giving me a look like, what are you doing? It's that podcast I've been talking about doing.
Put it on the phone.
Okay.
Do it.
Here. Okay. Here is my fiance, Jacqueline.
Hello.
Hello. Oh, okay. Oh, so you're engaged to Matt, and I was, I'm giving him advice because, I'm a pathetic degenerate who's been divorced and all this stuff. And he said, what can I do not to turn into me? And I said, like, is she a bitch? And he said, no, she's very, very nice. So now I know that you're very, very nice. I want to ask you, what should I tell him that he should do to be a great husband?
Oh, well, first of all, his answer about me not being a bitch was a good answer because that's a complete lie. But I don't know.
I think at the end of the day that especially women really underestimate how pathetic and basic men are. But like, we're just kind of like happy, like, oh, my wife is happy and I get to have, you know, sit and watch TV for an hour and drink a beer. Like, we're really dumb creatures. So it really comes down to what makes you as a woman happy. And men were just kind of like, hey, if she's happy, I'm happy because I don't have like emotions, so I leech off of hers. So what would make you happy with him that he can do to make this the greatest marriage that there ever was?
That's a hard question to answer. I don't know. I guess just, you know, try to make it teamwork, you know? That's the most important thing, I guess, to me, is that this is a team effort, that we do things together. Like, if we need to be in the house, you know, if, you know, we have company come over, let's do it together. If you gotta go grocery shopping, you know, sometimes I'll go by myself, but let's go together.
And you guys are pretty good, obviously, then, I would imagine, at expressing these things and talking it through. It's not like you're frustrated with that or anything.
Oh, no, absolutely not. No, he's great about that. I mean, he definitely there'll be times like where, you know, he's got some other stuff to do, or, you know, if he's gaming or stuff, I'll go, you know, to the grocery store or work on the house, things like that, which is fine, but I don't mind doing that at all. But he's great about if I say, you know, hey, can you help me do the laundry? Go, yeah, yeah, I'll help you. I don't have to nag him to help me. So that's the point I'm trying to get at.
No, that's good. You know, I'm just like, I'm like the world's weirdest random marriage counselor apparently right now. And anybody listening to this going, what the fuck just happened? Like, he was talking about like wrestling, and all of a sudden he's giving advice on like, well, you and your partner need to sit down once a week and write out lists and say, I'm happy about this and unhappy about that. And that would save your marriage from horrible downfalls or shit like that. So, you're a fantastic sport about this.
Thanks. Kind of hard to answer questions, but.
No, sorry. I was going to ask him. I'll ask him later in a second or two when you're like, I don't want the fucking phone anymore. I already talked to somebody tonight from Ohio, and I'm very fascinated right now with Ohio because I feel like Ohio is this very unique state. And you guys obviously always basically define every presidential race. Like, nobody's allowed to vote. Like, Ohio, like, I'm from Illinois. My vote doesn't mean shit. It's always going to be a Democrat. Like, but Ohio goes back and forth. And I have I have this theory. You should probably put me on speaker or something so Mac can hear it. I don't give a shit.
Okay.
Oh, fuck, am I on speaker now?
No. Should I put you on speaker?
No, I don't care. Like, you probably, yeah.
Okay, put him on speaker. I don't know how to work your phone.
Okay, let's see here. Okay, let's see if, is that speaker?
I can hear you.
We can hear you.
Oh, wow, that's a really good connection. Bless you, Skype. Skype, everybody. I'm going to plug them as a sponsor. If you haven't used Skype before, use it for all of your random, drunken, Saturday night podcasting adventures. Skype, it's not just for pedophiles. Anyways, what the fuck? I had a story I was going to tell, and I lost my fucking train of thought. And there's a reason to put you on speaker, so somebody remind me.
We're talking about the election in Ohio being kind
of... Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. My theory, because I was going to end this by making everybody feel really uncomfortable, like, oh, shit, I got to talk about my politics and shit, is that there are... Stereotypically, I just look at Ohio as like this Rust Belt state. It's not the West Coast. It's not the East Coast. It's not even like the Midwest. It's a very – it really embodies a very specific type of like union, blue-collar worker type of guy. And I have this theory that Donald Trump appeals to them in a way that other Republicans never have, because he says things like, oh, I'll put a tariff on import-export – and I don't like free trade, but at the same time, he also is like, you know, kind of like, I hate Mexicans who are going to take your jobs and shit like that. And so he's kind of like socially conservative and fiscally liberal, and I feel like that's where Donald Trump is drawing a lot of his support from, is guys like that, whether it's, you know, anywhere else, but in my mind it's Ohio, and I have no idea if any of that makes any sense. I'll stop talking now.
Well, Ohio is a weird state, particularly Cincinnati. Cincinnati is the most conservative part of the state. This is like when you look at how like all the major metropolitan cities vote in elections. For being as large as it is, it votes heavily conservative when most major urban areas vote liberal. So it's kind of southwestern Ohio is kind of an anomaly. But I understand the point you're making with that, and it's like he appeals to a certain level of working class.
I hate to say this, but he says, I think what the more elite, the more upper class, the, I guess, somewhat sexist, racist people are thinking. He said, or even not even, you know, they don't necessarily have to be sexist and racist and elitist, but He says the things that people are afraid to, you know, say out loud.
Yeah.
He says what someone else afraid is thinking, but they don't have the balls to say.
Right. He is like the voice of those who
are afraid to voice their opinion as one of our cats is drinking out of a cup. Oh, Jaden, no.
No. Don't confuse that as support.
Yes.
That's what I just said.
Right. So yeah, because this is a Gary, this is a Gary Johnson household here. So we're more the libertarians.
Hey, he had two terms. New Mexico improved when he was in charge of things. The dude proved himself, and if everybody votes libertarian come November 7th or whatever, I'll insert the date later. It doesn't matter. We can just get him on the ballot. It'll be really great. And we'll all be happy because we'll have, like, a real third-party person that isn't, you know, Donald, a fucking like, TV star, a fucking reality TV star, and a woman who just let her husband fuck whoever he wanted while she sat in the sidelines and then, like, and pretending like she was, like, all rah-rah woman power. Meanwhile, she's, like the reverse of a cuckold with her husband, and she used that. She can now be fucking president. Like, that's her fucking choice. Like, a hypocritical feminist and Donald fucking Trump. Like, we're fucked.
Yeah.
A man who's a parody of himself and a woman who gives feminism a bad name completely goes against what true feminism is about. Let's see.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I see this mimicking. This is like a fractal of 1992. With we have a Clinton, and then with Trump playing the role of George Bush, and Gary Johnson's going to be Ross Perot.
That would be so fucking great. I mean, at least Johnson gives a shit. Ross Perot is somebody that's probably looking at the election right now, and he's thinking, like, why didn't I fucking do it then? Like, because in 92, he just fucked things up and didn't do what he wanted to do. But he's still alive. I actually looked it up. He's still fucking alive. He's like 80-some years old, and he's still got billions. If he ran, like, as a third party, he's like, no, Trump's doing what I did. Like, I just said crazy shit and people voted for me. What the fuck? This is my year. He's like, he's probably really jealous that he's not president right now.
Right. I mean, Bill Clinton should have sent Ross Perot a thank you card because it was because of Ross Perot that he even got elected. If it wasn't Perot splitting the Republican vote, we would have had two terms of George Bush. So, and I think that's, if I'm putting on my prognostication hat here, I think that's how Clinton's going to get elected. The Gary Johnson and Trump will split the more conservative vote, and the progressive vote will go to Hillary. And at that point, we got President Clinton. I really think Hillary probably should actually be donating heavily to the Trump campaign if she wants to get elected.
I they're all basically six of one, half dozen of another. Like, they're all fucking scam artists and crooks. But I will say, like, I'll give Trump credit in the sense that, like, I looked it up the other day and I wrote some bullshit piece on halfguarded.com, and it was like, when I looked at, like, Hillary Clinton has had like $160 million in donations, and Bernie Sanders has had like $180 million in donations, and Donald Trump was like 12, and it was like, the dude is like, he's upsetting everything for free. Yep. And there's something really like I don't want to, like, I can't ever vote for Donald Trump because, like, my brain's like, it's Donald Trump. Look at the fucking, like, look at that. Like, you can't do that. But he's pissing people off, and there's a value to him basically saying to every other politician ever lived, fuck off. We're going to do it my way now.
Right. That style of politics, I think, is appealing to a certain segment. I think it's more than even that style than the message he has. It's someone who's saying what they actually think is that doesn't feel like they've been heavily guided by a PR company.
Exactly.
Who has everything polished. He's rough. He says really creepy, stupid things, which I think at times he does. He knows he's saying creepy, stupid things, and it's part of the whole Machiavellian puppet mastering.
I should not put my sense in this because we had a conversation about this.
Oh, no. I want to fucking hear this now. I want to hear her 2 cents.
I was driving home from work on a fucking tirade for like an hour. And
No. What was a tirade?
Well, it all started with someone who told me that I was stupid because of how I'm choosing to vote in this election. I am choosing to vote independent and writing Gary Johnson.
And I said my reasoning for doing so is because I find it personally immoral to vote for a lesser of two evils, because that's what a lot of people seem to be doing. And I think that is falling victim to a corrupt system, and I refuse to do that. And I was told I was stupid, and that it was throwing away a vote. And basically I tried to explain to them, like, there's a lot of people that think that we only have two choices because the government has only presented us with two choices, because people like Gary Johnson, who don't get the backing, the funding, you know, for his campaign, because, you know, we can only have two according to the government.
Yeah.
I was trying to explain to her that, you know, there doesn't have to be two options. You know, we can help put somebody in office that, you know, we as American people actually want. And I don't know. Basically, the tirade was just going on about that kind of stuff and how people are stupid and people are sheeple and all this other kind of stuff.
No, I totally get it, because, you know, Gary Johnson, you know, libertarian, it's a good policy. It's a good platform. I wish it would do well, especially, like, you know, reducing the number of people in jail for dumbass drug offenses and, like, oh, he sold some weed. Let's put him in jail for 20 years and everybody can feed him and shit like that.
Right. But when we have a for-profit justice system, at that point, you want to make as many people criminals as possible because you have a financial incentive to do so. When you have privatized jails that actually have built into their contracts minimum occupancy rates, that they are guaranteed so many prisoners at any given point, you're incentivized to fill them. And then those companies
really?
Yes. Look into it. They will actually, in their contracts, the states will guarantee so many beds will be filled. And then they are also the companies that lobby for three strike laws.
Holy egg.
Your three strike laws are lobbied by these private prison companies.
Like, is this some, this isn't like Alex Jones InfoWar shit, right? Like, this is.
No. Real. Yeah, when you look into just some of these contracts, they're nasty like that. There's financial incentive.
You got to be pissing off the NSA.
Yeah. Oh, it's all.
Hey, oh, hey, by the way, I want to blow up. Fuck Mount Rushmore. Fuck the Golden Gate Bridge. Fuck the Pentagon, the White House. My name is Michael Coughlin from Lombard, Illinois. I want to blow up everything. If the NSA gives a shit, come over here and, you know, fucking X-ray my cock, you fuck faces. You're not doing shit.
Hey, it's okay.
That's what I have to say. When you start talking, you actually have the balls to start talking about what you really think about the piece of shit government. And people are like, oh, you know, I have a couple of my friends that said, oh, you shouldn't talk like that, you know, like NSA, like fuck the NSA. Yeah.
Hey, I have a friend who's lieutenant major in the Air Force and intelligence. It's all good. It's all good. I got a guy in the Pentagon.
Well, you're part of the fucking, like, you know, just evil empire. Like, you have a friend in the Pentagon. You're one of them. You're one of the guys in control with the Bilderbergs and the Rockefellers. You fucking, you know, butt fucking me all day long to get your money. Fuck. You're part of the secret cabal.
Yeah.
I sense a bit of anarchism in this person. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little anarchy, a little, you know, libertarian. Just fucking do whatever you want and don't hurt someone and be happy with it. That's pretty much my only goal in life.
Right, yeah. Just, if everyone just kind of takes care of themselves, doesn't bother others, we can all get along. There's no sense in having to control everyone else. That's too much work.
Matt and I get hour-long conversations about politics.
Well, no, just fucking do it now on the fucking show so I can just fall asleep. I'll record it all. I'll wake up and go, oh, there's a fucking 2 hours of show. That's really good.
It's usually initiated by somebody saying something that pisses me off.
Abortion is murder, and any woman that has an abortion has fucking murdered a baby by every logical and rational sentence possible, and God hates abortion. Go.
Oh my. Okay, first of all, what's this guy's name?
Mike Coughlin.
Okay, Michael. Mr. Mike. I need to address the person about the guy.
Yeah, yes. Mr. Mike, yeah, I like it.
I don't know. I'm not going to touch on the religious aspect of it because I'm not religious at all, but I respect people that are, and I won't trash anybody's religion. But
whether or not, and my theory, or, you know, what I think is whether or not you would ever go out and have an abortion, whether or not you agree with it or not, don't take a woman's right to choose away. That's, I mean, that's the short answer of it. You don't take a woman's choice away from her. You don't have to agree with that. Nobody's saying go out, go down the street and have a fucking abortion. What's saying is you don't take that woman's right to choose what she needs to do with her body away.
Well, like, even like, you know, 8 months and 3 weeks and shit like that.
Do what?
Yeah. Like, say the baby's, you know, fully viable. 8 months, 3 weeks. It's got, like, you know, 6 more days to go before it hatches. And she wants to, like, flush it on the toilet. Can she do it at that point?
No, no, absolutely not. I think there needs to be, obviously, a cutoff point to where, you know, I don't agree with late-term abortions, but...
All right, Matt, you got to jump in now with your opinion on the matter so I can piss you guys off and fuck up your relationship.
Can I say one before we move on past it? Basically, remember what I said to you about the whole guys?
Yeah.
Right now, the whole abortion issue is in the hands of some fucking fat cat sitting up on Capitol Hill who are pushing social issues to actually distract us from what's really going on. And what is it that we always say? That there is... other words that I'm looking for. It's, you know, when it, okay, if Matt and I, if I get pregnant and Matt and I want to have a child, it is between Matt and I if we decide if we want to have an abortion. But the men sitting up on fucking Capitol Hill as fat cats who don't give a fucking shit about us have no right to have a say in what women do with their bodies. None. And the majority of the people that try to pass these fucking bills stopping abortion from happening are rich fucking men. You don't have a right to say what I do with my body. My husband does. My husband and I will talk about this and agree or disagree to do it together. So, but Mr. Fucking Smith on Capitol Hill will not fucking tell me what to do with my body.
Well, if your husband says no, do you have to listen to that then?
Do I have to? No.
So it's really just ultimately the wife's decision.
I guess it is because it's her body, but for me personally, I think that if a father wants to be involved in the child, said child's life, he should have a say too.
So if, like, you know, you guys got pregnant, it didn't work out because some asshole on the internet ruined your relationship, and he said no abortion, you would carry it to term at that point?
If he wanted it, but I, like, if I...
Yeah, like, you're like, I don't want to have a baby. He's like, oh, I want a baby because I have that instinct and urge like a fucking monkey would to procreate and have, you know, pass on my gene because I think that my genes are really worth something, even though they're not. Would you carry that child to term for him?
I guess I have to look at the reason why. If you're saying I don't want the child, but he does, I guess I have to, what is the reason why I don't want this child?
You found out that you're a fantastic disco dancer and you make a lot of money dancing at clubs around the United States and your career's taken off and you're going to make millions of dollars working, you know, 5 nights a week and doubles on Saturday.
Oh my God. I don't even know how to respond to that one. That's a shitty reason to not want to have a baby.
In this scenario, you're a shitty person. Like, I mean, you know, you're both shitty people. I'm just trying to figure out what's going to happen when you get knocked up under the anarchy system of Mike Coughlin law and I allow you guys to, you know, butcher a baby like you baby killers do. I got to figure out the reason why you're going to do it. That's all.
Us baby killers.
Yeah, it's a baby. You're going to fucking flush that thing down the toilet.
I assume Mike is playing devil's advocate.
He's a lawyer by trade.
Oh.
Oh, shit. Don't say that.
Lovely. Put this on there.
Yeah.
Shit. I don't know. Like,
what about gay people?
What about gay people?
Say you got two lesbians.
Yeah.
And they're married to each other. Like my cousin is, who I fucking love, and she's amazing. And they get pregnant with in vitro fertilization. Do you support... both the ability or the letting two gay people raise a child and also after they had in vitro, if one of them wanted to abort it, which woman's choice would it be?
Well, first of all, you asked me if I support if two lesbian women wanted to have in vitro and have a child. And absolutely 100% I support that. No questions asked. That's a tough question that I, you know, if I were a lesbian and in that situation, I would discuss it with my partner. I mean, inevitably, you know, at the end of the day, if I'm the one that's pregnant and it's in my body, it's still my body. But I would talk, I would want to talk with my partner about it. They would have a say in it too. It's their child too.
Would it be fair, like, especially with in vitro with two lesbians, we'll say in the middle of Nebraska, just randomly, not my cousin, if would it be fair if the woman, the lesbian that didn't get impregnated but she wanted the abortion, no, the one that wants the abortion is pregnant, and the one who's not, who's, you know, sterile, would if she paid for, like, the $20,000 for the procedure, would it be fair for the one, like, flush the kid down the shitter to reimburse her for the $20,000 that she spent to get it done?
I hate to laugh at that when he said flush it down the shitter, but these scenarios, man, I'm not prepared for this. Have you, like, given me, like, this is what we're going to talk about tonight. I'm not prepared for this.
Yeah,
no. I don't know. It just goes back, like...
I think it goes back to just your standard philosophy on relationships. It's team. It's a team.
Exactly. When you ask me what Matt could do to be the perfect husband, it's all about teamwork. You know, when you get pregnant, whether it's, if it's two females, if it, you know, in vitro, if it's two males and they're having a surrogate carry their child, or it's a male and a female, your partnership, you need to decide together. You have to respect each other's opinion. You decide together. You know, they might not be able to come to an agreement, and at that point, I can't tell you what to do. I don't think it's right that, you know, if I get pregnant and Matt absolutely wanted the child so bad that I would say, well, I don't give a shit. I'm going to go have an abortion anyway. I would never do that.
Because I think if your relationship is at that point and you can't come to some sort of agreement on that type of situation, at that point, maybe you should be questioning, should we be together? If you can't, on something that major, come to some sort of, it's hard to say compromise in that, because it's kind of like it's either, you either have the kid or you don't, but you should be strong enough in your relationship that you can have an open discussion and actually work through these issues, as opposed to saying it's my way or the highway.
Right. Why do you want to have it? Why do you not want to have it? What are the medical, you know, there are medical risks? Is it because you're a deadbeat dad who wouldn't do shit? And I'd be just taking care of the kid by myself and mm-hmm. I'm having to not beat down the door every day? Like, can you give me $5 for formula?
Right.
All right. I'll ask one final question of the couple. Is it right, and I think it is, that a woman should open up her asshole to a man so that he can cheat on her with her butt so that he stays faithful? Is that not a fair thing for all women in the world to adhere to?
I can't even answer that.
Yes, you can. You're the only one that can answer this question, because he can't, because his answer is, yes, it is right. But we need to know your answer.
The question is, I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. It's not like that's me. Is it fair? Okay. Raise your question again for me.
Could you repeat the question?
Yeah. Shouldn't a woman should take it in the ass every once in a while so that a man can feel like he's doing something different and doesn't get bored with sex?
Okay. The way you phrase it that way, I'm going to say that a woman obviously would want to sexually satisfy her man, her partner. And even if she's not a fan of said butt sex, maybe she should try to compromise every now and then, even on, like, anniversaries and stuff like that, to make him happy. It's a give and take type of thing. I might not like it, but I love you and you like it, so we'll see what we can do. Might have to get him drunk first, but...
I'm just going to say, Matt, you owe me $50, but fantastic. Yes, that's the fucking best answer we could have.
I love you, and I want you to be happy. So if you said it's either butt sex or the highway, I'd be like, Well, here you go.
So you can chalk her down to being pro-anniversary butt sex.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I cannot. We're fucking done. There's no way we can top that. Plug your shit before we end the phone call and end this podcast. So plug everything. You're pro. You did it at the beginning. You'll do it now.
All righty. So, yes, if you want to find out more about all the various, like, 8 trillion things I do, www.nwfwrestling.com is the indie promotion that I do sound and video stuff for in Cincinnati. You can also hear me on the Roll for Initiative podcast, first edition AD&D podcast at www.rfipodcast.com. Check out 3 Knee Deep. You can buy it on Amazon. And then also look for Army from Hell. It's a kung fu action flick that I also helped out with that involves Black Jesus coming back to fight Satan on Earth. So.
Wow. Holy shit. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I do lots of stuff. Okay.
And his wife's going to take him the ass for her anniversary. So Matt and Matt's wife, soon-to-be wife, thank you guys very much for doing this. It was fantastic. And you guys are amazing. We're going to do this again when I get drunk in the next couple days. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Sounds fantabulous.
Prepare me next time so I can sound a little bit smarter.
No, you gave the good answer, taking the ass like a champ. Yeah. All right. We have to – no. All right. When I hang up, it'll be done. So I want you to say – I take it in the ass because I love my husband, and then I'll hang it up.
Oh, my God. I will take it in the ass if I have to because I love my husband.